This is London Calling.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
I wish they'd get out of my way.
I love them. I do. Yeah, really do.
Hi guys and welcome. It's episode 10 of season 5 Big Smoke Music Weekly. I'm your host, as always, Luke Scanlon. Coming up on this episode, we have got a lot of stuff to get into. We've got gig reviews from the brilliant Katie J. Pearson and Swim Deep, who were on fire in Southampton when I saw them. Plus, a great Big Smoke In Focus artist this week. We are speaking with the brilliant Clockworks, the Irish outfit. They've been doing some ace stuff over the last few years, signed to the one and only Alan McGee's label. I'll be catching up with guitarist Sean Kennelly, and we'll find out how he ended up breaking his wrist and playing tambourine at some of their biggest shows to date. All this plus a close-up 60 seconds chat with the brilliant South London outfit, The Motive. We'll find out all about their tour news and what is going on in their world. Welcome, one and all. Hello, 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 you lovely lot. Would you look at that? It's episode 10 of season 5. Still get my head around the fact we're on the fifth season of this, but it's a ruddy pleasure to be here. What have I been up to since the last episode? Well, I did mention in that there episode that the only antidote to this shite, quite frankly shite, time of year is gigging season. It's back upon us, and what an absolute treat it has been so far. There's a wee nip in the air, but it's fine. It's getting a bit darker in the evening. But if you've got a gig to look forward to in the evening, it just makes the crap parts of winter absolutely all right by me. And the first gig review that I want to do this episode is of a brilliant former Big Smoke In Focus artist, the wonderful Katie J. Pearson. I went down to the Joiners in Southampton, which, by the way, if you haven't been to before, it is actually like a proper iconic venue. It's one of these places where all of like the past artists that have played there up on the wall, like Oasis, The Clash played there. Literally anyone you can think of has probably played at the Joiners. It's in like the weird part of Southampton that you otherwise probably wouldn't go to if you weren't either going to a gig or going to watch Southampton play at St. Mary's. But the venue itself is so cool, man. You come in, tiny little bar, loads of neon signs up on the wall, and then you go through like the tiniest little corridor to get to the where the stage is, and it's always like a complete bottleneck to get out to the stage. But then once you get around to the left, there's always a shit ton of room, but you just got to be that dickhead that's kind of like barging your way past a lot of people, or you take the alternative secret route round to the left. But anyway, enough of that, enough of the floor plans of the Joiners. Let me tell you about the gig then. It was a couple of weeks back. And yes, the wonderful KTJ Pearson. It was the first time I'd actually seen her play since the release of her latest album, Sound of the Morning. And as I mentioned to her before when she came on for the interview on Big Smoke Music Weekly, her voice, man, is just something else. I don't actually think there's a voice like it out there at the moment. It's kind of like a little bit Dolly Parton, a little bit Kate Bush. I can't quite put my finger on it, but it just works so well and just really, really draws you in. And she actually said during the set that she was like, God, it's actually really quiet in here, but lovely, thank you. I think she appreciated having a crowd that was actually fully locked in to the occasion and paying attention to what she was doing. But yeah, some great tunes. Talk Over Town was sounding great off the new album. How, Float, Alligator, and my favourite track off the new album, so, so good, Game of Cards. Absolutely huge tune, man. So yeah, she's one of these artists that I think is just really adaptable, and her sound could probably be used in quite a lot of different things. And in saying that, I mean, it's just crying out for a film soundtrack. I'm sure something, some producer somewhere from the film world, from Hollywood, man, needs to get onto the KTJ Pearson train and really make the most of her, because she's great. I also saw the other day, Something Is Afoot with Metronomy. She uploaded a picture, which I think is like a screenshot of a camera filming her and Metronomy frontman Joe Mount, who I spoke to down at Pohoda Festival in Slovakia. So yeah, watch this space, kids.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
As I mentioned at the top of the show, I have another gig review from the wonderful Birmingham outfit, Swim Deep. Fun fact, used to live with the guy on keys, the wonder on keys, James Balmont. I'm hoping to chat with the band actually later on this season, but I'll be giving you a review of their gig down at Southampton, another Southampton gig. They played at Heartbreakers, great little indie bar slash venue. So yeah, I'll be coming back with that one a little bit later on. But for the time being, let's hear what's going on over at Sound On's YouTube channel. Big Smoke Music Weekly in partnership with Sound On. Now's your time to catch up on all of the great content over at Sound On's YouTube channel. As I mentioned last time out, they've got a great live set from Seb Lowe live at the Met, which, again, it is a must watch. The team will be at Manchester's Neighbourhood Day Festival on the 1st of October, so do check that out. I'm sure the team will be uploading an amazing recap of the weekend taking place in the heart of Manchester and what a bill it is. The Snuts, Everything Everything and Sundara Karma headlining that bill. Then you got the likes of Far Caspian, King No One, Lauren Hibbard, Corella, Brooke Coombe, who I love, 10 Tons, Go Express, Skinner Brothers, Eads, Egyptian Blue, loads, loads more. So yeah, keep an ear out, keep an eye out. That'll be next up from Sound On. Big Smoke Music Weekly in partnership with Sound On. Okay, all right, party time. I mentioned in the intro of the show that we'll be having a lovely wee chinwag with the guitarist from The Clockworks. I've been meaning to catch up with this band for a long time, and even more so since having seen them at Truck Festival. I was lucky enough to sit down with the brilliant Clockworks. Yes, I managed to chat all about how it came to being, signing to Alan McGee, coming over to London from Ireland, and how things have completely snowballed for the band in the last few years. I had a wee sit down with the guitarist, Sean Connelly? Is that how you say it?
Good. I'll just start by correcting you. It's actually Connelly.
Oh, Connelly, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, not your fault. Everyone does it.
When I was typing it out, I was like, I wonder if he ever gets confused with Sean Connery.
I actually got that for the first time in my life last week, so it's funny you should mention that.
That's amazing. I've never known it to be pronounced that as Kennelly.
Yeah, neither has anyone else in the world except my family. So
yeah, you're cursing it every time.
I should just change it. Yeah, every single year in school, every new teacher, Connelly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mate, I feel your pain with the Irish name because I've had Luke Salmon before, believe it or not.
What is it?
Scanlon. It's Scanlon.
Oh, Scanlon. Yeah. Good Irish
Very
name.
Common yeah. Irish name. I'm like, it's Scanlon. All right. So, but yeah, mate, Joe, your accent, obviously you are Irish. You sound way more Irish. Every time Six Nations on, I get it in the ear so much because people are like, you're a fake Paddy.
Joe, I was just talking about fake Paddies and that phrase, plastic Paddies, with James, the singer of the band The Last Day. It's an interesting one because, you know, I'm Irish through and through as far as I know, but like I know a lot of people who have, you know, Irish grandparents who moved to the UK whenever in the 50s, 60s. And
yeah, that's exactly me, mate.
Yeah, not an identity crisis, but like a longing for the Irish kind of side of things, you know, like going visiting family and stuff in the summers and stuff like that. I empathize.
Mate, 100%. I go to Joe Kenmare on the Ring of Kerry. I've been there quite a lot, but my family from Limerick. But it's just pubs, mate. If anything, I love Ireland, but the pubs are so much better as well.
it's a different world. Yeah,
exactly.
When it comes to pubs.
Well, before we start recording, I did say to you, I wanted to chat to you about Galway because it's been on the radar for a long time because every Irish person I've met that have been to Galway, like, best night out.
Really? Yeah.
Best well, we night lived, out is like, Galway.
Yeah. We're from a small town called Loughrea, three of us are, and Galway City is where we like moved to, and we had a good few years, you know, 18 to 23 or whatever in Galway City. Dags, Stags hen nights rolling in, rolling out, and that was our spot. So
that age bracket as well was like the perfect window for the biggest nights out as well.
Yeah, seminal.
Yeah, exactly. They're always the ones as well, you know, when you look back if you're at uni or whatever and you're like, oh, it's weird, I can't remember last night and I drank like half a litre of vodka. It's like...
Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah, what's going on? But anyway, mate, you said, what was the name of the village you guys are from? Sorry, again?
Loughrea.
Cool. So how, just to give us an idea of where that is and how small a place, how did you guys go to school together and that's how the band formed?
Yeah, so three of us, me, Damien and James, the drummer and the singer, we were all in the same school. James was a year or two above me and Damien. Me and Damien were in the same class right the way up. Yeah, we just started playing music together in school, you know, lunchtime to pass the time. When we weren't playing football, we were in the assembly hall with the guitars. So any way to get out of a class or whatever.
And here you are now. So when did you're currently in London at the moment. You moved to London and that's when everything kind of kicked off, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'd kind of put in our dues, you know, we paid our dues back in Galway. And we kind of set ourselves a goal to sell out our local venue, the Roisin Dove. And we said once we'd done that successfully, we'd move to London and give it a proper go. So we didn't want to move, you know, too soon. We just wanted to kind of prepare ourselves because we knew that it might be a make or break if you go too soon. So yeah, that's what we did.
That's an amazing thing to do though, man. That's such a roll of the dice to have done. And was that like in 2018, 2019 time?
Yeah, so it was January 2019.
Amazing, man. I love that you came to London in like the bleakest month as well.
Yeah, we'll start the new year off right, you know.
I bet you're like, oh, it's pissing rain. I'm broke because I'm in London. What's going on?
Pretty much.
Love it, mate. Love it. Well, tell us anyway how things went in that period of London, because I've followed you guys probably like last two and a bit years, I reckon. But I just love the story, how it did go. You, as you said, you rolled the dice and things worked out for you very, very well. So tell us what happened there, man.
Yeah, it was Mr. McGee. Yeah, here we go. It was a quick turnaround, to say the least. I think we moved on the 17th of January. And before the month was out of January, we were signed by Alan McGee. So, you know, McGee and Creation Records was home to some of our absolute favorite bands of all time. So to get a response from him that he liked the music was enough for me. But then for him to go on and sign us was just, you know, it validated our move immediately. So, yeah, it was amazing.
100%. I bet there were some pints drunk that night, weren't there?
There were. We went to our local Spoons because, as you say, London is expensive. So,
love it. Straight into Spoons. Yeah. Nice one. And you get a burger for a fiver with your pint.
You do. And we did.
Amazing, man. So, yeah. So, who is the Creation 23 label, right, that you're mm-hmm. on the beginning? What other artists are on there at the moment? Because, as you said, Creation's such a iconic label, but I think lesser known, obviously, yeah. Is Creation 23.
Yeah. So, I think it's more of a passion project for McGee. At the moment, he's just trying to kind of, it feels like, give back a little bit to the smaller bands. Well, I guess every band is a smaller band until they're not, you know, like even down to Oasis, you know, completely unknown until they met McGee.
Yeah, because I do know Alan does do a lot for new music, because he has a show at Boogaloo Radio, doesn't he? And a mate of mine works there and stuff. And yeah, it's amazing that he's still, after all these years, that he's got the passion and the hunger to keep doing it. Do you know what I mean? I think a lot of other people are like, oh, I've signed away, so I'm going to put my feet up now.
Yeah. That'd be the easy thing. No, sure. The amount of bands that he signed, you know, even before Oasis, it's crazy. It's such a track record, something to be really proud of.
I know. Literally achieved more in about 12 of my lifetimes.
Yeah.
Amazing, mate. Amazing. Well, let's talk about the Clockworks EP, mate. I'm absolutely smashed it since it's come out. And the thing I love about you guys is such a big kind of, I always say this, but to describe it, a wall of sound with you guys. And it kind of follows on from, I think Enough is Never Enough is probably the most similar previous track to that. So what was the kind of line of thinking with that EP? Was it just you happen to have these tracks there ready to go, or was it like a theme across the EP?
I think we had just felt like we had put out enough singles and we kind of wanted something a little bit more substantial because we've got so many songs. You can only release so much music, especially when you're on a label, you know, and there's a whole campaign that goes with every single or whatever. So we wanted to put more music out because we've got such a backlog, basically. Like Endgame, the first track on the EP, is actually one of the oldest songs that we've ever written. So like years and years old. Now, we did revamp it a little bit to re-release it or release it for the first time. But yeah.
I'm real, man. How come? So you obviously had it on the back burner for a bit with Endgame. How come that kind of, you were kind of like, should we dig that little number up again?
Yeah, that was actually McGee, because we, so it is with bands. I think the more time passes, the less interested you are in older songs, because you're always moving forward creatively. Yeah. And so I would say that we in the band had kind of disregarded that song for one reason or another. And we were in a position where we were looking to put out a single maybe or an EP, and McGee was like, what about that song? I think it was called Headline. We called it Headline. It was used to be called That's Not a Headline. There used to be a lyric in there. He just gravitated to that song for some reason. And I'm so glad now that he did, because we had chosen the last couple of singles and he was like, give me a chance at you know, choosing one for you, which was the first time we'd done that. So yeah, it was cool. It's cool to revamp an old song.
Fair play, mate. Joe, it's interesting you mention having loads of songs and trying to pick from and putting them together, because yeah. I saw you guys at Truck Festival this year. I swear to God, that was the hottest tent on planet Earth, by the way. There was just I don't mind a tent normally, but it was just dead air in there. There was no breeze.
Yeah.
Normally you think, I'll get out of the sun. And oh my God, man, it was so hot. Was it hot for you guys up there as well?
I was going to say, yeah, it's like any other time I'd be in shorts, we would be in shorts. I can't go on stage wearing shorts. I can't do it. It just goes against everything I believe in, I think.
Yeah,
so far.
Exactly. Yeah. Unless you're an AC/DC man, you can't be wearing shorts.
That's it. It's kind of it's a look, isn't it? And it's not a look that I'm confident, you know, strutting around the stage on. I'll go down to the shops in a pair of shorts. No bother, but I don't know.
You can't be looking rock and roll in a pair of shorts, man. How did you find that set went anyway? Because honestly, it was like, came for me at you know, when you're feeling a bit rough at a festival, you guys were the perfect pick me up at that time, man. You sounded so
nice.
Good.
Thank you. I had a blast. Which one was the truck?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did truck and tramlines. That's the only reason I ask, on the same weekend. So I was trying to recall which one it was. But that was, I think, the second gig. Yeah, so tramlines first, then truck. I had broken my wrist, so I was on tambourine duties.
Yeah, God, of course, I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
That's so that was fun for me.
Hazily, partially drunk memory.
Yeah, sure. Same. It was one of the first times that I could really enjoy the gig and actually listen to what the band sound like and stuff. It's weird.
Sure. I just thought you were some weird sort of like Bez impersonator.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What happened?
I'm afraid that that's what people thought.
What happened with your wrist, anyway?
We were on tour in Germany and a few bevvies, 4 o'clock in the morning, no taxis. We had to share two electric scooters, you know, the Lime rental scooters.
Love
and
it. Yep.
Yeah, according to the doctors, that's how everyone's breaking their wrist these days. So I'm just
mate, it's the best way of getting around there.
It is, but I'm just another statistic now, you know, I'm just another broken wrist. So
just another sorry statistic.
Yeah, a bit of a cliche.
NHS waiting room.
Yeah.
I'm real. Well, anyway, this was a very roundabout way of me getting back to what I said about you having loads of songs now. And I was intrigued thinking when I was putting this into you together, I was like, I've actually always wondered with bands, obviously you're kind of still building up your repertoire as it was, but how hard is it to, because obviously it's quite a tight set you've got at a festival. Mm. How hard is it to actually whittle it down onto a set list? And how do you kind of stick with the same one, or are you just like, see how you feel on the day sort of thing?
I think we're generally always kind of tailoring it, and we tailor it gig to gig as well. Like a headline gig would be totally different to a festival gig. But yeah, like we had a core set of about 30 minutes for the last like maybe 2 years, 3 years, because we like kind of, when people don't know us, it's nice to get in and out and leave them wanting more. But kind of the more we're kind of slowly building up our audience, you know, we feel more comfortable doing a 45 minute or whatever. So now the headline tour, we're probably going to be looking at like an hour, maybe just over an hour. Because you want to give people their money's worth at the same time, but you don't want to bore them to death either, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wish, talking about clockwork, Jesus, you're just watching your watch all the time.
Exactly,
yeah. Is that quite a daunting thing then for a band when you get these kind of like 15 minute staircases going on with the set length?
for me anyway, I'm excited because I'm looking forward to the Bruce Springsteen days where we get to play 4 hours, you know, like we've got so much material. Yeah. But I think until you release an album and people aren't familiar with it, you can't expect them to be totally engaged with 40 minutes of songs they don't know and 20 minutes of songs they do.
In the meantime, just splash out on a shit ton of pyrotechnics.
Yeah, put it all into the show. Yeah. Hey, music second.
Yeah, sod the music. Keep everyone entertained that way, man.
Yeah.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Oh, yeah. Well, earlier on, I mentioned that I will be giving you another gig review, and that one comes in the form of the superb Swim Deep down at Heartbreakers. Last weekend, it was actually on a day I was really, really hanging. So for a change, I actually did make the drive to a gig instead of getting on the beers. I honestly, it was a hangover that was so bad. Legend. And just a lot of that Saturday was spent in bed. But do you know what? It made me actually really enjoy the gig even more. I think sometimes you can over egg it when you get excited at a gig and you basically end up just drinking far too much and not actually having the best memory of the gig. I briefly mentioned earlier that I used to live with James Balmont, the master of the keys, a few years back. And when their previous album, Emerald Classics, landed back, that was in 2019. That was when I was living with James. And the last time I saw them was down at the Grace in London. It was such a good night. And I love that album because it really did kind of put like a firm marker in my memory bank of that like specific time living in Northwest London. And just living with one of Swim Deep. It's one of those random things that happened in my life. Like if you'd have told me 6 years prior to that when their debut album came out, I'd have been like, yeah, all right, pal. But anyway, the boys were in great form on Saturday night. It coincided with the 5th anniversary of the venue, Heartbreakers. And it really was like a party atmosphere, to be fair. I think it obviously helps that it's a Saturday night, not your usual. I swear every other gig's like Tuesday night. Cheers, mate. That's a midweek hangover. Saturday night, the crowd was bang up for it. There was balloons. It was all going on. The energy in the room on the night on Saturday was so good. And I kind of got the impression that the band were really, really happy to be back on the road. I think it's been a long time getting back there. And my pal, Sam Tucker, who runs Close Up, who we do the 60 Seconds with, he's now managing them. And he's just so proud to be a part of it. And I think they're such a nice group of guys. I knew James was, obviously, having lived with him. But it's really nice to hear they are that nice band and just nice humans as a collective. And they actually posted on their Instagram after the gig with a picture of Ozzy, the front man, just looking real chill, holding out a tambourine and just saying, playing live again consistently has been our answer to all our doubts and insecurities about making music. And, that just really resonated with me. Not that I play live music, but I can imagine for these bands having 2 years away from playing live to finally get back and on the road. And just, I think the real seal of approval from fans, seeing their faces, loving it in the crowd, singing the words back to you must mean a lot. And with that atmosphere there at Heartbreakers, it was such a nice place to be. And just a brilliant, brilliant set from the guys. Just all the great tunes. She Changes the Weather, Honey, King City, Little Blue, and of course the beautiful To Feel Good, which I absolutely love.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Okay, let's dip back into my chat with Sean Connelly from The Clockworks and let's have some bloody fun, shall we? Let's play Either Ors.
Okay, number one is festival or tour?
Tour.
Tour. Why so?
Because I love my job and I want to do it more. So a festival is just one day in and out, and a tour is obviously, you know, whatever, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So
fair. I would argue you, more you can be who you want to be at a festival, though. You could be a tambourine player, a guitar player.
That's true. That's true. They each have their place, but I'd have to give it to tour.
How many shows did you have to do just playing tambourine, by the way? Was it just truck and tram lines?
And Puckle Pop in Belgium as well.
Amazing.
So, and it was actually the three biggest tents we've ever done, so Robbie, who filled in for me, got a real rock star lifestyle for 3 weeks there.
Mate, that is absolutely incredible. The biggest shows you've ever done, and you're playing tambourine.
Typical.
That is very typical. It'll be a triangle on the upcoming tour.
Yeah.
Number two, Shit Guinness or Shit Weather?
Shit Weather.
Gotta be. Do you follow Shit London Guinness?
I do, unfortunately. Yeah, it is
depressing, isn't it?
There is something to be said for every London Guinness is a shit London Guinness compared to the real stuff, but I won't go into that area.
It is dreadful. The worst one you get is when the head's just like that light brown colour and it's watery with bubbles in it.
Bubbles.
Like,
if I see bubbles, yeah. Get out.
I mean, Sean, you seem like quite a mellow man, but I think that's the only inclination of anger I've had from
glasses
you.
Will be thrown.
Yeah, literally. Number three, you said you mentioned your football, but this is ultra Irish of me. Hurling or Gaelic football?
Gaelic football, I think. I don't know. Well, hurling actually to watch.
Hurling's great to watch. I watched the All-Ireland final this year. It is brutal, isn't it? It's amazing.
It's unreal. It's like the best combination of all the best sports, I think. You know, it's physical, it's insanely fast paced, and yeah.
Someone asked me the other day, when I say the other day, my sense of time is shocking. It's probably about 3 months ago. They were like, what is hurling? I was like, it's probably football, rugby, hockey, and a bit of Aussie rules.
which sounds horrible, but you watch it and like you get into it. You know, if there was a Drive to Survive Formula One thing about hurling, I feel like the whole world would get into it. It's so good.
It's just non-stop as well. The blokes who play it must be insanely fit, man. I'd be dead after 10
they're
minutes.
Huge. And the coolest thing about it is well, maybe not for them, but it's amateur as well, so like they all have day jobs, you know. So imagine that much training. Like their legs are fucking huge, you know. They're proper men,
they are,
like,
as well, but they can move as well, so I'm real.
Yeah
carrying all that weight, but yeah, they get around that pitch, man. Okay, number four is weird DM from a fan or weird encounter with a fan. What would you rather face?
I think encounter. I think anything in real life is gonna beat any encounter online.
True.
Yeah, I don't mind weird encounters with fans. I think it's hilarious because it's so bizarre.
Have you had any weird ones that stick out in your mind?
This was weird, but in a good way. The time before we were in Germany, we were walking down the street at, I think it was about 2 o'clock in the morning after a gig. We just finished off like a bottle of wine from the corner shop. And a guy comes out of a pub. I don't know, was he drinking or was he DJing or something, but he goes, oh, Clockworks. And we were like, hey, were you at the gig? He was like, what gig? So we're just in like Cologne and a guy recognizes us on the street and he wasn't even he didn't even know we were playing a gig. That was cool.
Mate, that's insane.
Yeah.
That is so weird. I honestly, when you were telling me that story, I thought you were just going to say he happened to randomly say Clockworks and you were in the back.
Oh, no.
I was like, that was going to be mine.
No, he knew.
That's unreal, man. That's so good. And the last one, mate, this is a contentious topic of conversation I had with my mate the other day. Meal deal, are you choosing crisps or a chocolate bar to go with your sandwich?
Oh, I have to say, I get meal deals quite a lot, and I would,
oh mate, gotta be
this done. Is a boring answer, but it's probably 50-50. But if I have to answer, I'm gonna go with crisps because I've got quite clammy hands, and to hold a chocolate bar, you know, you're usually on the move when you've got a meal deal. You're usually like en route somewhere and you don't want to be, you know, chocolate hands.
Nice.
Mr. Chocolate Hands, yeah.
Love it, mate. I've never even considered the fact that clammy hands could come into either or as an answer. Oh,
it's my cross to bear, man. It is what it is.
Amazing. Well, that is the end of either or, Sean. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
We'll come back to my chat with Sean later on in this episode, but for the time being, let's turn our attention to another Close Up 60 Seconds.
Close Up 60 Seconds.
I am joined by James from The Motive. How are you, sir? You all right?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, my friend. Yeah, not too bad today, yeah.
Lovely stuff. You are on tour at the moment, on the road, but before we talk about the dates that are going ahead, tell me about what happened with this one that was cancelled, because I can imagine for a band it's really annoying, but me, myself, as a punter, don't really know quite how annoying that is. So tell us about that, man.
Utterly frustrating, especially when you're our level, so you're independent, like we don't have management, we have like zero people backing us or anything like that. So every single tour that we get, every gig, you know, we've grinded for personally, and it's hours spent in emails and then itineraries typed up and, you know, checking your analytics, checking the fans that will come to the show, all of that stuff. And then, yeah, to have the rug pulled from underneath you is infuriating.
Oh, man, I thought I had it bad at work. But, Jesus, yeah, that is massively, massively annoying. So, let's step away from the negative chat. How have the dates that have gone ahead, how have they been going, mate?
So good, yeah. So we headlined in Bristol on Friday. It was only the second time we've been there. And, you know, it's one of them things where you make the jump up, you're like, oh, this could go bad. Especially when all the other bands were Bristol bands. Yeah, everyone's going to bring, like, their mates to the show and then leave, which we'd understand, but it's a bit annoying. But genuinely, everyone stayed. And it was a fantastic, fantastic event. The sound was great. The audience, you know, it's one of them ones where you have to sort of, you have to work your way with them. You know, they didn't give you everything to begin with. So the fact that by the end of it, you know, everyone was singing the songs along, it's a great, great feeling. And then straight after, obviously, you know, when you have these back-to-back tour dates, you've got to be a bit professional. You've got to sit down, you've got to, right, lads, you know, one beer, can't have any more than that. You get your head down the next day. We headed straight out to Northampton. And then our stage, which was the Black Prince, that people had played there before, was looking at all the walls, and it's just one, it seems like steeped in a bit of, you know, history. The venue sounded great, the stage was set up beautifully, everything went to plan.
I'm laughing, man, just the smug look on your face, because I can imagine not always everything does go to plan. I just wanted to ask, because this Friday, day of recording, you're playing at The Grace in London, 30th September. Just want to ask, obviously you boys are a London band, how has it been kind of building up your fan base in London? Because obviously it's a great place, so many gig venues, lots of people to be able to bring to your gigs, wide catchment area. But with that, is it, because it's so saturated, is it actually quite a hard place to be as an upcoming band?
We are a proper London band. I was formed in Kingston upon Thames, where I was born, and then I currently, and the band currently, live and rehearse in Wandsworth, in a little further up in southwest London. It's tough. It's not the easiest scene. You know, I always make the comparison that if you're a band from Stoke and you go, all right, Friday night, we're playing this gig in Stoke, you're probably the most interesting thing that's going on in Stoke that Friday. So people are going to come along. No offense to Stoke, it's a great place, but like,
my inbox is now blatantly going to be full of hate messages from Stoke City supporters. Cheers, James.
I love Stoke. It's a great place. It's a great place. But yeah, in London, you really have to network, and you've got to have people that see you as, like, you're on your grind and you know what you're doing. You know, and the tickets especially are another worry, because luckily, not with this event, I've been so blessed. We're literally about 80% sold. And on the week of the gig, people only decide in the last sort of 2 days, or possibly on the day, if they're going to come, because it's just so, everyone's so busy around here. So to have that sort of level of backing already, to know the room's pretty much packed, and I've only just started sending out, like, personal messages today. So it's like, there's no point. No one knows what they're doing, you know, this Friday on the Monday.
Perfect.
So yeah, it's a great, great feeling. But yeah, there is that sort of vibe that you do need to have an angle, and you've got to be something and do something in incredibly different for people in London to actually take notice. So it's a nice feeling to be where we are at this point. Yeah.
Yes, mate. Well, whilst I've got you here, let's talk about your latest EP. It came out in August, The Longer That I Stay Here. Joe, what I love about it is an actual proper EP. Six tracks, man, six tracks. Not like this four-track, three-track EP rubbish. And the best thing about it, as we get into the colder months, it is just summer. Summer bottled up in a little record, isn't it?
It's got to be a feeling, yeah. Yeah, I suppose it is how everyone is. You can't write about something that you aren't feeling, because it's going to come out and it's not. You can tell. You can tell with anything you listen to if someone's really behind the message that they're giving out. So every single song was written, I don't know, I'd say it was all written within about a two-month period. You know, and it's all just follows that theme of sort of trying to get out of where you initially, you know, came from. It's different for me, because I only moved about 8 miles away from where I was born. But that's a big cultural gap between, like, sort of bordering on Surrey and then, you know, actually living in big scary London.
Hey mate, I know all about that jump. Went to uni in Surrey, moved into central London. It is weirdly a massive jump. So strange. Anyway, James, if you're ready, I reckon it's about time we get into the close-up 60 seconds. Okay, James, James, the first one is, crucial question, the best biscuit to dump into a cuppa and why? Go.
Oh, digestives, because you've got half chocolatey side and half biscuity side. Amazing, yeah. All Maryland. All Maryland.
Pull that back there, man. When you said digestive, I was like, this kid is just asking for his biscuit to crumble straight into the cuppa. But you pulled it back with the chocolate. So
that's
okay.
That's a horrendous biscuit.
You also mentioned Maryland cookies. Weirdly, had them the other day, and this is proper old man chat, but they're definitely not as big as they used to
tax.
Be.
Sugar tax. I hit them. Back in my day.
Beautiful stuff. All right, you're only 7 seconds down on the time so far, so let's get into question number two. And I have to say, quite intrigued by this. What is your favourite item of clothing to wear whilst playing on stage?
Oh, big black t-shirt, usually. I do actually cane the lads about this a lot. Fashion choices, I'm like, you have to, you know, until we decide we're like a jumpsuits only band or something like, or you're a suit and tie band, like, you've got to have that diversity. You can't be showing up wearing a massive yellow jumper.
Mate, that was so David Brent. Fashion choices, yeah?
Yeah, sometimes I like to wear sort of either neutral tone or black t-shirts, usually trying to support other small businesses, like my mate does clothing and stuff. I'll try and wear whatever I can on the stage. If it's comfy for me, I don't really care what it says because there's a guitar in front of it.
Alrighty, let's have number three of the close-up 60 seconds. This one is asking, what is your biggest pet peeve about a gig?
That's such a difficult question. I get annoyed by so much. Probably the lighting on the stage, especially when I see it back in photos, right? Because I don't have a very pronounced jaw, right? And I'm also going bald here, right? So I've got this twilight zone, yeah, where I can't be too far down because the hair, and I can't be too far up because the jaw. So I have to constantly try and find like the correct area to place my head throughout the whole show.
Lighting at a gig, interesting. Didn't think you'd go for that one, man. Right, number four is, in a Hollywood blockbuster about your life, who is playing you, James?
Holy God, James Corden? Now, I'm trying to think of like a relatable Hollywood person, just Jonah Hill or Seth Rogen.
Jonah Hill? Why are you picking people that look absolutely nothing like
No, I'm not from here, from sort of, you know, the neck downwards. That's the important bit.
Yeah.
I can't have Leo DiCaprio play me.
Now for the final question. If you were describing London to an alien in three words, what are said three words?
Fuck.
You've got 15 seconds.
Expensive. times three. Expensive, unique, and
that's a minute.
Beautiful,
gone,
yeah. Beautiful. It is beautiful. Yeah, you're never bored.
Great description of London. All right, James, thanks ever so much. That is the end of Close Up 60 Seconds. Be sure to check out The Motive. Great little band. And if you can catch them live, please do so. Close Up. Okay, let's get back to the interview proper then with Sean Kennelly, the guitarist from The Clockworks. We started off by getting back into a bit of chat about life on the road on tour.
Cool, right. Well, Sean, let's chat about tour because you mentioned just then in Either Or's that mad story of the guy in Cologne. By the way, what a city Cologne is. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, very nice. We've been twice now, so.
Yeah, so good. Have you tried that curry versed thing? Have you tried that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, mate, absolutely. What's your opinion? Because I think I had a bad one. Because the curry sauce is great, but the actual sausage was vile that I had.
Maybe you did have a bad one. Maybe you did. what do we have? They do really good curry chips as well. They obviously have a different name for it. But yeah, they put curry on anything over there. And I'm here for it. I like it.
They really do. They really do, man. So you've got loads of dates coming up. You've got 14 in the UK and Ireland, which starts in Brighton on the 29th of September. Playing in London on the 13th of October, and 8 dates in total in Germany. As you can see, I'm reading it off the screen. I haven't memorized that.
Yeah, you know better than I do. So.
I'm there like, So yeah, mate, what is it then with Germany? Because as I said, you've mentioned it a couple of times. Have you just got a big fan base there? Because I know that happens sometimes with bands that just a country will pop up and it just latches onto them.
Yeah, like David Hasselhoff, isn't he huge in Germany?
apparently so.
Yeah, no, we're not quite David Hasselhoff yet, but Germany, I think, has a... They're just into our kind of music, not to downplay it or anything. It's just, I think people over there generally connect with our style of music more than other places. Now, Europe is good in general, like France is amazing, and the Netherlands are amazing as well, and Belgium. Everywhere in Europe, really love playing there. But yeah, I don't know. Germany's cool. There's a cool promoter out there called Gunther, and he just likes bringing us over. So yeah, it'd be good to do a full tour.
That's great, isn't it? That is about as German as they come, isn't it? Amazing. Just going quickly back to kind of, obviously you've had a bit of a busy summer with festivals and stuff, and then you've got all these tour dates ahead. Because I think a lot of people in general, I know we're kind of a bit further down the line now, but when you've got this stretch out ahead of you after like the last couple of years of doing sweet FA, does it kind of, I guess you're bang up for it, but are you kind of like, Jesus Christ, I'm going to be knackered, or is it just like, bring it on?
I think it's more, way, way more bring it on. I think, yeah, the last 2 years really put it into perspective for us, like how, well, for everyone in the world, but you know, how easily it can be taken away. So I think we're literally playing every gig as if it's our last now, because it actually could be, you know, in our lifetime that has happened. So
yeah,
it's given us a whole new perspective on, you know, playing every show like it's your last.
That's unbelievable, man. Is there any standout city that you've been? I'm always intrigued by this. Is there any standout city that you like? Obviously, hometown shows are great, but any city that you always love coming back to?
I think Paris so far. Just for me, I absolutely love Paris. Just the vibe is so cool there. You know, it's so chill. Everyone's so kind of chic. Yeah.
London. That's pretty why I've never been, because I'm just chicless.
You have to go there to find your chic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you have to do. Yeah.
The freaks are chic. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Also, mate, I was going to say to you, it never ceases to amaze me. Wherever I've been in the world, like I've seen one in Malaysia, I saw one in Zagreb when I was there in the summer. There's just an Irish bar wherever you go. Like, what the hell is that all about?
Do you know what it is? I've kind of thought about this recently, is that I don't think they're owned by Irish people. I think it's a money grabbing thing that people go, yeah, like, do you ever notice there's not an Irish person working in there? Like, very rarely. That's the first thing. Yeah. And that's okay. You know, it's okay to have people working there around Irish, but like, suspiciously little, you know. My experience of Irish pubs, they haven't been very authentic.
Yeah, and actually a lot of the time you can rarely get a Guinness in them.
Do you know what I mean?
So it'd just like, be like Harp Lager.
People see an Irish pub and they're like, this is going to be a good night. So you know, it's just good business
for sure, man, for sure. I just want to have a little gear shift, because it's been like such a hot topic at the moment with loads of artists and like being made to do social media shit. How do you guys feel about it, and is there any pressure on you guys? I know it's different for everyone, but does it cut? It must, because social media annoys me in my job. But how is it for you guys? Is it something that's like actually on your mind quite a bit?
I think it's the same, yeah, for us as it is for you. It's kind of annoying, but like a necessary evil. And I'm the one who does the social media, so I've the job of editing videos and pictures and, you know, content. That word content is so annoying. God, yeah. But yeah. You see Bo Burnham's comedy special on Netflix, that pretty much puts it into, that's me.
Yeah, sod that, man. We can move on from that. And just to end it, mate, so obviously big kind of autumn coming up with tours. Is there any rumblings of an album?
There maybe, yeah. We have a 2-week window set aside in October. Whether we get to do it or not is another thing, but we're gearing towards it now. As I said, we've so many songs, we're in the stage now of whittling down which songs rather than, you know, building up the catalog. So yeah, we have a drive folder, but 21 songs we're down to now, so we're trying to slowly work on it. And yeah, October is the focal point.
Well, if you don't release a triple album, I'm gonna be really disappointed.
Yeah, we might have to, you know.
Can't wait, mate. And I'll definitely come see you guys. I think I'm going to come to your show in Southampton, actually. So,
oh, nice. Yeah, that should be a good one, I think.
Yeah, it's a great little venue. I don't know if you've ever been to Heartbreakers before, but
no, I haven't. But I think Southampton sold quickest, as far as I remember on the ticket reports. So yeah, big up Southampton.
Probably me talking about how much great a band you are.
Well, yeah, appreciate it. Anywhere you can get it.
Love it, man. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Sean.
Great. Cheers. Thanks very much.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Okay. At the end of last episode, I just remembered I promised a return of Oldies But Goldies. Yes, this time out, we are taking a trip back to the sunny, sunny days of April 2006 and a band called Good Shoes. I absolutely loved this band back in the days, so much so that I used to copy their artwork and had it actually in a frame, painted by yours truly, up on my bedroom wall. I absolutely love them. Their debut album, Think Before You Speak, honestly, still now, still a proper album that belongs in, like, the canon of indie great guitar albums. So, so good. Let's dig into this review from Good Shoes, a mere 16 years ago. Jesus Christ. One of my favourite parts of this review is, we can go on for hours about the puns on Good Shoes. Do they have good shoes? So good. Anyway, that's probably the best part of the writing involved here. But it goes on. Good Shoes are a great band, and they do have the songs to back them up, such as We Are Not The Same. We are not the same. We are not the same. And it's making me so difficult. So difficult. So difficult. So difficult. And Small Town Girl. But the reviewer says, can the band cut it live? In the review, they kind of compare the sound to The Jam. Not far from The Jam. Indie pop with a mix of The Jam, which I find quite interesting as an absolute Jam nerd. Not one, a comparison I would probably go for, to be fair. On the night, at the social in Nottingham, it goes on and it says, the band are as good, if not better, live than they are on record. This is what we look for in a band. So true, man. How many times you've been to a gig and the band just backs up and probably is even, the energy is just so raw when you see them live. You're like, fuck, man, need to can this up. It's better than the record. So good. So the piece carries on and it says, the night goes on with All In My Head. Thanks again for swinging by for another episode. I'll be back next time with another interview, the second interview with Amazon's front man, Matt Thompson. Absolutely thrilled to chat to him again. The band have just released their third album, How Will I Know If Heaven Will Find Me, which went to number 5 in the UK album charts. It's overall their third top 10 UK album. I'll be chatting to him all about how the sound of that new album came about and the brand new direction they're taking. Plus, it'll open up on how life without his girlfriend helped form the ideas behind the record. I'll also ask him if he'd prefer to be awarded for Rear of the Year or Redhead of the Year, and I'll find out how on earth he ended up getting a selfie with Spice Girls' Mel C. All that to come in the next episode. For the time being, take care and catch up soon.